You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Rob, what happens when you go home and you bring a bunch of charky with you?
Oh gosh, I get bombarded by kids who want it.
I hear there's one particular flavor they really like.
Oh, they love the red chili.
Really?
The
red chili?
Well, you know what? Actually, I have a lot of kids, Paul. Some of them love the red chili. Some of them love the sweet and spicy.
The sweet and spicy is my favorite too. It seems to be the popular one on Amazon.
It's good.
It's really good.
It's really good.
If you haven't tried charky, give it a try. Go to Amazon today and search CHARKI for sweet and spicy lamb jerky. In fact, if you didn't know, charky is the original term for jerky. It was anglicized when the Colombian or the pre-Columbian days, the conquistadors came up and they brought this ancient Peruvian method of drying meat up with them. That's when charky was anglicized into jerky, and now we have charky. So we're going back to the original. We're going back to our roots. We're giving you something that is purely delicious. It is not covered in chemicals or preservatives. Seriously, give it a shot. I am ruining this commercial, but give it a shot. It's really good. I don't know how to tell you it's really good, other than there are members that come to our trainings all the time and say, you know, I tried charky. I was really kind of wondering how the whole lamb thing would be, and it was way better than I thought. So if you want to be surprised, check out charky.love. Anyway, Rob, welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Pablo.
It's Pablo. My name is Roberto. And this is episode number 609. We're glad you're with us. We're thankful for your questions. We're thankful that you're spending a few minutes of your day with us. So
we really
hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. And thank you for those reviews. Wow. Three figures in reviews on iTunes. Keep them coming, guys. It really does mean everything to us. Today we got an interesting question that I completely forgot what it is. So let's go ahead and play that question.
But we just know it's interesting.
Hello, my name is Darren Crane. I'm from Western New York. Hopefully a future 107 certified pilot with the help of the Living the Drone Life book, which I first read. I'm also a longtime listener of the podcast. My question is in regards to a recent podcast where we discussed taking off a public property, flying over a property you're not necessarily allowed to take off and land from. In your instance, it was the national park, and then returning back the public property to land. My question is, what happens in the unfortunate event of a crash? Or if you're forced to make an emergency landing, what are the legal ramifications as far as the FAA is concerned? Also, is this a loophole for, let's say, the Park Service to then confiscate your drone and ticket you? And what right do you have to go then try to retrieve that drone? This obviously extends to all situations where you would do that, public property, takeoff and landing. Look forward to the answer, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Darren, for the question. And guys, don't forget, if you have a question, go to askdroneyou.com. Get those questions in. We'll get them on just as soon as we can. We love hearing from you guys. And this is a unique question. It's an interesting one that we've not heard before.
I was trying to figure out which way I was going to go with this.
Like, the right way.
No. There's always the legal way. I'm talking about like the attitude, the tone.
Huh. Tell me more. The attitude tone.
Well, before 2014, I really loved National Park Service. And then the director or whoever, I don't want to name names, you know who you are, decided to write a memo to say, drones are not allowed in national parks. It's not a law, but it's a regulation or an interpretation of such, which is obviously arguable in court, but no one's done it yet. So I love the fact that we have the loophole that we can take off and land outside of the national park and then fly in
carefully.
It saved my booty many times. It also goes to show the importance of doing a really, really good pre-flight check before do these flights. If you're not aware of how to test a battery in your first 10 seconds of flight, you should learn how to do that. Another thing you can learn in Drone U. Knowing how to do that will potentially save a battery issue.
Right.
Also knowing your limitations for the drone.
Absolutely.
Altitude, temperature, everything. Okay. Let's talk pure regulations, right? If you're flying in the national airspace system and you have an emergency, what do they say, Rob? In an emergency, what can a pilot do? This is a test question for part 107.
Oh, crap.
Well, you're going to get this one wrong.
I have no idea.
Rob's going to get it wrong, guys. Well, for you listening out there, the answer is in an emergency, a remote pilot can ignore all laws and regulations of the National Airspace System to ensure a safe landing that does not threaten the safety of persons or property on the ground. So you can ignore all legislation, all regulations.
Interesting.
If it is emergency.
Including flying over people, but that would not be keeping them safe.
I don't think that's really smart. Come on.
I know, but you're saying all regulations. I'm just clarifying.
Hey, I'm saying what it says in the book.
I understand.
Okay?
I understand.
Anyway, I know you're saying that. I'm not being facetious. No,
I'm
I know, but some
clarifying.
Other people are, and they probably found it funny, and I really don't find it funny because.
What's funny is, never mind.
No, what's funny is that in 3 years they're going to change the whole flying over people law, and then I'm going to look back and say, look at that. I used to be so anti flying over people, and now it's fine because we know it's coming. We know they're working on it, and we know it takes 3 to 5 years for them to pass such a law. And we know it's coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
So I want to be careful about what I say because ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm still not comfortable with flying over people.
Even
not
if it was legal.
Not because of me, correct. Not because of me, but because of how other people inflate their self skills,
right.
their inflated perception.
Well,
of
an accident can
fly.
Happen to anybody.
100%. And when there's 100 variables that you're trying to systematically nix in your pre-flight and you don't do it because you're excited because you're flying over people, this is when problems happen.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm not cool with flying over people. Yes, in the future, I believe it'll go away. And, I can look back on this podcast and say, I was real with everyone. I told them exactly what we know and what we think.
But as it relates to this question, so you're saying that you're in the system and you have an emergency.
So here's how I see it. Let's paint the picture, right? Let's take Lake Powell, my favorite national park, which is Glen Canyon National Recreation Area. Because of the Navajo Nation, you can fly Lake Powell. That's the only way you can do it. Thank God for the Navajo Nation. Anyway, if I were to have an issue, right, the FAA, which is the only body that controls the airspace, says I can negate following regulations in order of an emergency.
Okay.
If I were to crash at National Park Service, I am sure that an NPS officer would argue that you were flying in their airspace and thus now you are, liable for a fine. I would say, this is when I pull out the drone pilot field kit again, dronepilotfieldkit.com, the NPS memo and say, no. Take off, land, operate from. See the operate from. That's all you have control over. You do not control the airspace. And so what I did is I took off from outside the park and I flew in and I got some really beautiful stuff. And then after that, I had an issue. And you know what the FAA says about when you're in an emergency, that you can ignore all regulations to ensure for a safe landing. Because
including an NPS memo.
Correct. Well, let's talk. Okay, so this is where I would love to hear from some drone lawyer, and God knows what half these people are doing. But it really shows who's trying to help just by the case law, who's working on cases. Loretta working on the Taylor case. Rupert, I hate how quiet you are with me now, but
he's
helped
out there working.
Yeah, but his actions speak louder than words. I mean, look at Rupert, right? He filed our 333. The 333 never essentially came to fruition because the FAA was like, all right, well, we're done with 333s.
Right.
Everyone can get a 107. And he didn't have to, but he gave us our money back.
Right.
I mean, I think that says a lot about his ethics, and I'm pretty sure he did that in hopes that I would talk about this on a podcast, which, Merry Christmas. So, that being said, these lawyers, you know who's legit because their actions speak louder than words. And I would love to hear a lawyer's, especially an aviation lawyer's, perception on this exact issue because who is the only government body that controls the airspace? The FAA.
It's the FAA, sure.
in my opinion, and I am not a lawyer, do not use this as legal advice. In my opinion, I believe that you would be okay. And I would fly and do such thing, and I would stick my neck out on the line in this scenario. And you know what? There's a chance that you may still get arrested because, you know, the cop is like, well, I don't see the interpretation like that because I lived in the woods for the last 30 years. Like, you know, I don't know.
Well, so. No, and I think that's a really good point, regardless of where the officer lived for the last 30 years.
My best friend is a fox named Claudia.
Oh, gosh. But the reality is, no matter how right you are, there's a decent to really good chance that you're going to have to deal with some conflict and potentially have your drone confiscated and have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Even if they're wrong.
Oh,
yeah. That doesn't even matter at that point. You've got to figure out how to get your drone back.
And one of the big things to know in that situation is you cannot act defensive because it's going to make you look guilty. You have to sit there and be calm and say, all right, sir, I understand where you're coming from. Please let me pull out my drone pilot field kit, and I'm going to pull out the NPS memo that you're referencing. I'm going to pull out the federal law, which I'm referencing, and I'm going to show you that I am indeed correct. But I would appreciate the opportunity for me to go get that. Is that okay? Am I being detained? Very important question. I really... really would say be careful about asking that question because it could piss someone off. You know, one thing that my dad told me, right? Number one lawyer in his field, in who's who for 27 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've never said that before. He talks about himself all the time, and I'm sure he would love it that I just said that. But
well, it's true.
The one lesson I learned from my dad about being in a courtroom, the first person who raises their voice loses. Why? Because if you cannot argue eloquently and calmly, you are not going to have the perception of intelligence and thoughtfulness, because perception
and
is
innocence.
Everything.
Yeah, it is. So, no, I think we've always talked about that, Paul, about just the way that you treat people and the way you interact with people respectfully and calmly. It's going to serve you well in this case, obviously.
Yeah, and a lot of police officers listen to this podcast, and I'm all for them having drones, and I'm all for them using them in legitimate ways. And, you know, when people say, well, what about law enforcement? I say to them, how would you feel in this situation if you were the victim or you were suspected of something?
Yeah.
And always remember, guys, even if the person is suspected, they still have a chance of innocence. You don't know.
Right.
So put yourself in those shoes. And I've said that to a lot of cops, and they're like, you know, you're right. And oftentimes, like, we really struggle. We have to act first. And you don't always get the time to think second.
Mm-hmm.
But then I say, well, don't you run across these scenarios in your mind all the time? I'm like, well, yeah. Okay, well, you're pre-programming your habits before it happens.
Sure.
So anyway.
Well, and hopefully you don't run into that situation if you run into the situation that Darren describes. But whether you're right or wrong, you're probably going to have to deal with a little bit of conflict.
I feel like we just talked for 20 minutes about what if this, and then what if that.
But it is something that I think people are going to do, which is take off from public, fly over the NPS or any other private area. And so because of that, it's not necessarily a what if.
And by the way, I think a lot of people are doing this whole NPS taking off and flying in.
Exactly.
Because people realize how ridiculous this rule is. I mean, NPS is using drones themselves for search and rescue, for mapping, for geology. It's like, why can't people who are more trained than your people to fly? Why are you not allowing a permit process? This is ridiculous. When people are realizing this, they are not going to follow your rules. They are going to do what they want. And that's a problem, because you're going to have these people on the extreme ends of the I don't listen to authority, and then they're just going to do more and more and more. Guys, you know, NPS, you are in control of perception. If you want people to follow the rules, create a process by which people can become permitted. And I know that we had talked to one of the guys who flew for NPS during that search and rescue, and we've talked to him about having him on the podcast.
Right.
But again, he's like, I can only say certain things. And he's, you know, he's like, you can't talk about this, can't talk about that, like blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Here's the thing. I love the fact that NPS is exploring drones, but you guys also have to be realistic.
Sure.
There can't be a double standard. Otherwise, people are not going to listen to you.
Well,
it's just that simple.
I think we have to keep in mind, though, our society and technologies move very, very quickly. The reality is that an operation like NPS or an organization like NPS, it's going to take them some time to do whatever they're doing to get comfortable with drones. I hope that process is going on and that they get to a permit system sooner rather than later.
I hope so too. But, and I understand their concerns of people not knowing, you know, how to fly, not knowing how to handle wildlife. What if you get attacked by a bird and you're in a national, you know, park? Right. They're going to take the bird's side. And if you don't know how to turn off certain sensors to kill the sound that the birds hate, or you don't know how to, you know, mitigate an emergency flight from that point. Mm-hmm. Another thing, too, is if these people, this is a great reason right here why NPS should have a permitting process for commercial drone operators and be more positive to it. Okay, let's take Copter Bill's story, right? Florida. They're flying a long distance. They're doing this pretty much exact same thing where they're flying as pretty much to the extent of visual line of sight, okay? Mm-hmm. So let's say 2,000 feet away, even though that probably wasn't realistic. I'm using 2,000 feet as a visualization, okay? Okay? Hawk comes up behind the drone. So you like it's hard for the visual observer to see the hawk, and the pilot's definitely not seeing the hawk because it's behind the drone, right?
Right.
Hawk grabs the drone. This was an Inspire 1. Drone down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How are you going to mitigate that situation when you are 2,000 feet away and you can barely see the hawk?
Right.
And the NPS wants to protect the hawk, right?
As they should.
As we do too.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it seem smarter to just have a permitting process to let people fly inside the park so if a wild animal were to attack a drone, the problem could be much better mitigated because we have much better visual line of sight of said drone. Thus, we can better mitigate risk. Does that not make sense?
Absolutely. And like we said, we hope that they're working towards that. And probably they are.
Yeah.
Probably so. They are. Just being careful.
I'm waiting for we've already seen that lawsuits are going to control where regulations go. We've seen that with the FAA, seeing it with other departments all over. I think when someone challenges this NPS rule in court, I think that would be the fire that gets lit under NPS to say, no, you got to do something. Don't get too comfortable in your government job. I know you leave Fridays at 3:30. I get it.
I want to leave Fridays at 3:30.
Or find a job that you actually enjoy, and then you'll enjoy being there all day.
That's
weird.
True.
On that bombshell, that's going to do it for us today. My name is Paul.
My name's Rob.
This is Ask Drone You.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.